This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! In the left field, December 3000, a run is scored!
Smith courts one into right down the line. It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal fans. Welcome to the Thursday morning edition of Two Birds on a Bat, your St. Louis Cardinals fan podcast from the Patio Studios and brought to you by our good friends at InnovatedCompanies.com. Special thanks to Randy and Stephanie Green for their continued support of the show. Residential, commercial, industrial, doesn't matter. We got the construction team now. Heating and cooling, electric, and brand new to their umbrella is the plumbing team. So it's one-stop shop for you. And as we always say, get Randy involved in the process early. If you want to save some money and you want to save some time, he'll help you. Man of his word, 35 years experience, second-generation craftsman, fully licensed, bonded, and insured. And a good time, as you guys found by watching our Facebook Live video where you got to meet Mike from Adam Smokehouse. And we appreciate his generosity, of course, and our good friend Randy Green and everything he does for us from Innovative Companies. Excited about the show today. I got my friend Josh Potter in from Art City Media. What do you say, pal?
Hey, how are we doing, guys?
Benji Molina is working on something right now with his brother, actually. So we're going to be about 15 minutes away with Benji. Before we go to him, I have a friend that's on the line. I'm proud to call him a friend. I met him a few years ago coaching youth baseball. And I knew he was a special cat, no doubt about it, when it came to you know, teaching the game of baseball. You could just tell that he was different. You could tell he knew what he was doing. You could tell he was passionate about it. Little did I know who he really was. I have a cousin that was he got a couple cups of coffee in the big leagues and has made a career out of baseball. He's a coach now, and he had kind of actually turned me on to this gentleman and said his stuff's unbelievable. We got to work with him a little bit in Chicago. And through the game of baseball, he and I have become friends, and I've had my kids up. I've taken them up to Chicago to work with him, and we subscribe to his stuff. And he's almost getting too big for me now, though, because, you never know if you're going to find him one day working with a 5-year-old or a 25-year-old making millions of dollars. I always kind of laugh about. So I want to welcome into the show a renowned hitting guru and basically tremendous baseball influencer, Justin Stone. What's going on, Justin?
Hey, Jim. Good to talk to you from Chicago, and the friendly confines are right down the street from me, so doing a Cardinals show is a little bit unique, pretty cool opportunity.
Well, just so everybody's aware, you are a Cardinal fan. You grew up in this area. You actually coached high school baseball over in St. Louis for a while, and before you wound up making your home in Chicago, and then really now becoming one of the best hitting coaches, I would say, the country. But I find you now all over the world teaching hitting. So you've done an amazing job, and your information. If anybody follows you, you know, at Elite Baseball, I'm telling you, if you want to know what a hitting coach really does, this is where you need to go, because it's not what people think it is. I try to tell people all the time, most of your good hitting guys are kinesiology guys. They're body functional movement guys. You spend a lot of time doing that, and I think your expertise in this is going to help us today, because Cardinal fans, you know, we didn't have a game yesterday, and we were always talking about things that I don't know if we really know that much about. So I thought I'd bring you in today to talk just a little bit about hitting in general, and either explain maybe why it's a struggle or why sometimes it's easy or what we're ideally trying to do. But I thought maybe you could answer some questions for us.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, number one, first and foremost, old school versus new school. The first question I have for you is this. You know, if you tell somebody that played baseball 30, 40 years ago that ground balls are bad, they're going to want to punch you in the face. That's a fairly generic statement, but ultimately, at the end of the day, why are ground balls bad?
Well, with what we're seeing today in professional baseball, the specialty pitchers coming in the fifth inning and after, I mean, these guys are throwing 98 miles an hour plus. And I don't know if you saw the stat on the game the other night. ESPN said we're already on pace to have more than 20,000 pitches of 98 miles an hour or more this year, which is going to be the highest ever. It makes it extremely difficult to string three hits together in an inning. Now, in 1970 and 1980, the biggest stat in baseball was who was going to be the hitting champion each year. It was batting average. And that's changed now today because we value slugging percentage over batting average for this simple fact. If we can score a run, if we can get our offensive output in one or two hits versus stringing three singles together, then we have a much better opportunity to score. And that becomes extremely difficult to do with the advanced defensive analytics that we have in the game today. It's extremely easy to predict where a player is going to hit a ball on the ground. And because, of course, on the infield, the players are closer together, it just makes it really hard to get a ground ball through the infield for a hit, let alone three of them to score a run.
You know, I maintain, and Josh Potter and I were just having this conversation before the show started, I maintain that the issue really is that it's not – like, when you're having a conversation with somebody, it's kind of quick and off the cuff. You don't really get into an in-depth description of what you're really saying. And I think most people think, well, you know, when you hit the ball in the air, they just stand underneath it and catch it. I don't think that's what we're talking about. And you had said something to me when we were talking about this that I think describes it better. There's just more room in the outfield. If it's not hit really high up in the air and inside the yard, not over the fence, which more balls are flying over the fence every day – but as long as it's not hit relatively with hang time, I guess. I don't know what word you'd use in baseball. Yeah. But there's just more area out there to have balls. You got balls that land in between the outfielders and the infielders. You got balls in the gaps. You got balls down the lines. There's only three guys out there, and they're covering a whole lot more ground. So I don't know. Is there a better way to describe it?
You're right. Yeah, and there's, you know, the name launch angle became – a very popular one a year and a half, 2 years ago, as people started talking about it, that were having success in the big leagues, Josh Donaldson, et cetera. Now it has a little bit of a negative connotation at times where people think, well, we're just trying to hit fly balls and those are the easiest things to catch. And as you said, that's an easy out. But you have to realize that it's misunderstood. Every ball hit has a launch angle. Now, if we have a negative launch angle, it means we're pounding the ball into the ground. You know, if we get 0 to 10 degrees, that is a hard hit line drive that oftentimes will one hop through the infield, but we find that sweet spot. And that's really what we're talking about, the value of launch angle, that we can predict to a fair certainty, unless we hit a ball right at somebody. If you hit the ball with a certain miles per hour at a certain launch angle, the prediction of success of you getting a hit, let alone an extra base hit, is through the roof. And those are objective numbers that we have collated over a period of time that we can say, yeah, if you hit the ball hard on this angle, success is going to be a really high piece. At the same time, if you get too high in the air, you basically have to get the ball 95 miles an hour or more, and then you have a chance for a home run. Otherwise, that ball is most certainly caught. So that you have to find that sweet spot in an you know, I'm a trainer, so from a training standpoint, when we're training with very little variables, I'm hitting a ball off the tee. If I'm doing front toss or batting practice without changing speed, that is something that we can focus on and train. I've done it myself. I've had a player that came to me as a minor leaguer with a certain organization, very high exit velocity, very low launch angle, brings his data in for me from his organization. I look at it and I said, well, you know, you hit four home runs in a 4 year big league or a 4 year minor league career. We trained on that. He was pretty mechanically efficient, but we trained on changing his launch angle. He hit 16 home runs in a AAA year and makes it to the big leagues in the same year. It completely changed his life. So we find that sweet spot that you can train towards, and the predictability of success just goes way up.
You know, it's funny. Josh has done some research on this, and I don't know that we have a good answer for this, but I did. I mean, you hear him say this on MLB Channel all the time, and that. You know, in this day and age, it is odd that some of the hardest hit balls are balls that are hit on the ground. And we were kind of talking off air about why that is. And you know, I mean, I have my own theories, and we talked about it, and, you know, squaring up balls, doing this, doing that. But at the end of the day, I think about all the balls that are hit 100-and-something miles off the bat, and because they're hit on the ground, they're outs. And you think about balls that are flared between outfielders and infield. I mean, you know, it's still a game of inches sometimes. I don't know. We won't ever get away from the fact that some balls are hit well and they're hit for outs. Some balls are hit not so well and they're hits. And line drives sometimes turn into outs, and ground balls are base hits. And I think at the end of the day, it's why we play 162 games and we look at averages. And am I missing something there?
No, there's still an element of chance. But you're realizing that front offices all across baseball are now being stalked not by traditional baseball people all the time. Yeah, there's that element still, and it always will be. But there's also a lot of Ivy League guys running around that are extremely intelligent and can view those algorithms and come up with data sets of predictive analytics and say, we know where this player typically hits the ball, and we can align our defense to that. Every organization in baseball has that, which is why you're seeing all what would be considered in the Tony La Russa age a drastic shift. Tony was the only guy that was doing this at the time, and people would thumb their nose at him. And now you're seeing every major league team that uses the shift at some point or another. And that's not a gut feeling by Mike Mazzini in your dugout. That is a Harvard guy in a back room with a computer saying, chances are this is where the ball's going to go.
I got to, you know, before you go, and I know your time's limited, and I appreciate your time, I got to address something. You know, we hear a lot in town here, you know, Mabry's on the hot seat quite a bit. And, you know, last year we had some guys that routinely would go down to the minors and they'd work with, I guess they call him Buddha. Do you know Buddha at all? I mean, have you ran across him?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
But he is a kinesiology, functional body movement guy. And I think the big concern here is people are always asking, well, I don't understand. I thought John Mabry was the hitting coach. Why do we have to send guys down there? And I've tried to explain to people, I don't think John Mabry is a hitting coach in the sense of what you think a hitting coach is. John Mabry has a job to do, and it's traditionally just to – I mean, he does a lot of video. He you know, he helps the guys. This guy down in Memphis or wherever he's at now, he's a hitting coach. He's a swing coach. I try to – Mabry doesn't have 16 hours a day for 7 straight days to work with one guy. He's got I mean, you're knee deep in this, in and out, all from everything. I mean, I know you've worked with multiple clubs, multiple professional players, I've tried to tell people that in every city right now in a hotel room is some of these guys' personal hitting coaches, and they hit with them off site before games, and everybody thinks these hitting coaches or these major league teams are these guys' actual hitting coaches. Do you think you could adequately describe what the role is and how it's different?
Yeah. I mean, what John Mabry's job to do is each day getting those guys ready to compete in the dirt. And that's a difference than trying to get somebody efficient with their body. In terms of what makes a hitter good, timing is the most important aspect of that. Pitch selection, pitch recognition, and approach. I would put all four of those things well ahead of mechanics. Now, mechanics gives you greater leniency on either side of timing. So if a guy is mechanically inefficient, his timing has to be impeccable. Otherwise, he's going to struggle. You're going to see those guys being extremely hot and cold. So Mabry's job is to get those guys prepared for that day. Make sure their approach is locked in. What is this pitcher's out pitch? What is he most likely going to attack you with? And that in itself is hours of research, feel. John played at the big league level, is going to have a lot of insight to approach, especially with some of those young hitters. They're kind of learning the game at the major league level. A swing coach that you're mentioning with the name of Buddha, that's somebody that's looking at the way the body functionally moves and is looking at the way the player has efficiencies in his swing or inefficiencies. Now, how that's important is if I have a guy that's inefficient, he may even have great bat speed. He may have good exit velocity because the guy just is big and has mass. But if it takes him a long time to get up to speed and you're facing 98-mile-an-hour pitching, you're basically starting your swing when the ball leaves the pitcher's hand. You just run out of time. So when a guy is more efficient, it gives them a longer chance to track the baseball, be under control, and commit to the ball much later, which, you know, with the spin that we have on the ball with the big league pitchers today, as hard as it's coming and the breaking pitches that they have, that is a huge asset for a player to have and a huge detriment if they don't have.
I think at the end of the day, the hardest thing for us as fans is to talk about something in an educated way when we really don't know as much about it as we think we do. And, you know, we have – and there's no disrespect to media guys. We got guys that have no idea what they're talking about trying to tell us, you know, about launch angles and exit speeds, and all they know is what somebody else told them, and who knows if they – what they – the person that told them knows what the hell they're talking about. So that's why I was interested to have somebody on that basically this is what you do, and it's an everyday occurrence. My good buddy Josh Potter from Art City Media that sits in with us loves stats. He loves analytics, but he also, you know, tries to apply them to the eye test and the comparison to see where it is. So I know Josh has got a quick question for you before you go, Justin.
Sure.
All right, so right before you leave us, hey, do players change their launch angle depending on matchups with pitchers, lefty, righty, you know? I mean, switch hitters, do they try to keep their same launch angle? I mean, you know, what do you have for us on that?
Yeah, the really it's the variance of pitch speed and location is going to be a bigger impact of that. You have to remember that the swing is an arc. And the lower the pitch is in the zone, or oftentimes if it's an off-speed pitch and we catch it further out in front, the arc of that swing is changing what we call the attack angle to the ball. So if you hear on those same broadcasts that Jim just mentioned, they'll say, well, if the pitch is coming 8 to 10 degrees downhill as a fastball, then wouldn't we want our bat to be 8 to 10 degrees uphill to match that pitch plane? But because the swing is an arc, that attack angle to the ball is ever-changing. So a player that catches it out in front more, assuming we're still attacking the underneath side of the baseball, it's going to have a greater attack angle, meaning we're going to potentially lift that ball higher in the air. So a lower pitch, we're going to have a bigger arc in our swing because the body's posture is going to tilt over more to get the barrel underneath that ball. A pitch more up in the zone, the player's going to be more upright as they're rotating, which would mean a flatter swing plane. It's the same arc. It's a different body lean or posture. So the launch angle of the hit is going to be very much determined by the timing of it and the pitch location.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing always. It's like, how easy is it to adjust? You know, it's a game of adjustments, I know, but we're talking about doing the hardest thing in the world. And, you know, I think they've even scientifically proven that it should almost be impossible to see a baseball and hit it.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
You know, it's an amazing thing. And you make
all the things you have to add up that the brain has to do. When you add those up, it's greater than the time it takes for the pitch to get to home plate. So some physicists have said, yeah, this should be mathematically impossible. We still find a way to do it.
Well, you picked a hell of a profession. Let me tell you, you're out there teaching somebody how to do something that's impossible.
Well, I picked the best profession. If they're successful three out of 10 times, I'm awesome.
You got a better gig than the weatherman. That's awesome. So
that's right.
Well, hey, listen, I appreciate you. I know you're a great resource for another show that I do, you know, helping kids and helping other people do stuff. We got a lot of guys out there that have kids playing baseball. Justin, I'm going to let you hawk where they can find you for their kids and baseball training and things like that, because you got one of the best products out there on elitebaseball.tv. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find
it? Yeah, the elitebaseball.tv site is it's a video resource. It's a complete library of teaching progressions that whether you're working with a six-year-old, which I have, working for the first time, it's utilized by several colleges and universities. So it has a little bit of something for everybody, but defensive progressions, offensive pitching, everything, you name it. It's really the only one of its kind on the web. That's at elitebaseball.tv.
Well,
thanks for letting me say that, Jim.
Oh, no, absolutely. And again, I know you're a Cardinal fan living in Chicago, and it's tough on you right now, but you know, you were brought up here, and I know that you like to get back here sometimes. But you know, I know you got some guys playing on different big league teams too, so you're a fan, I guess, of baseball, I'll just say it these days. But
I am. Yeah, you have to be a little more neutral in my profession. But I certainly grew up I guess I'll say it this way. There's like two people in my life that I would be starstruck by if I ran into them in public because of the job I work in. I'm around professional athletes all the time. And I'm just doing my job. But if I run into Ozzie Smith sometime, I'm going to stammer like a schoolboy, which I don't normally do around professional athletes. So, yeah, I grew up watching those mid-'80s Cardinals teams, and it was a big influence of who I am today.
Well, I can tell you, I appreciate everything you've done for me personally and both of my kids. You've helped them immensely. So I look forward to using you as a resource in the future, my man, because I don't think this is going to get any easier.
Yeah,
we're going to need more. We're going to need more help. That is the great Justin Stone.
Central, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish.
I said the Central Division is going to be a fun one this year. You got four teams separated by one game, so it's going to be a fun summer for you guys doing the show. Good luck to you.
I just figured you'd want to hang on and hear yourself called the great Justin Stone, because that's how I refer to you all the time. All right, my friend. I'll talk to you soon. We're going to get up to Chicago here real soon. My kid's, he's struggling a little. Actually, okay. No, I take that back. He's actually hitting better now than he was at the beginning, so we'll see. All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Again, the great Justin Stone. I know, Josh, you were sitting over there just smiling from ear to ear, having a guy like that on that is knee-deep in it. And again, I think, you love this kind of stuff. Am I describing that the right way? I think sometimes we try to talk educatedly about something that when you hear somebody that really does it, you realize maybe I don't know as much about this as I think I do.
Yeah, well, and thinking about launch angle, I didn't think of it as more of a I guess it is your swing, but it's really the contact that you make with the ball, and that, delivers, the hit, whatever it may be. And I do it all the time at home. I'll stay up till freaking 4 o'clock in the morning just staring at stats because I have to get it off my mind and do all this. But I don't resource the stats to give me the opinion that I'm looking for. Or I don't know how to really word it other than basically back up my theories, my hypothesis on, what this guy is doing, what the eye test basically gives me and what it tells me from being around the game for 15 years, playing a couple years in college and stuff like that. So that's where I use the statistics to kind of back up my Colton Wong's not doing too bad right now. Well, he's batting .308. He's doing this, this, and this, blah, 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 in the last seven games. So stuff like that. That's what I really use and love analytics and statistics and numbers for. Is that right there?
Well, let's get to some Cardinal baseball here, and there's nobody better to get involved in this conversation than our friend and yours on the m4byyachty.com hotline. Let's bring in the man himself, Benji Molina. What's going on, my man?
What's going on? Let's do this.
Welcome to the show today. I know you were trying to get something sorted out with your bro. Speaking of your bro, he tweeted out or Instagrammed out yesterday that he's walking around with no pain, he says, feeling better. What I tell you, if you guys think he's out 4 weeks, you guys are all crazy. I'm telling you, you guys are all nuts.
I don't know, man. I want to believe it. I mean, obviously. But it's just hard to believe that he's going to be back in three, man. It's crazy. That's too short.
I'm telling you.
I would say four or five, man. I mean, that's just about right, man.
Hey, he hasn't even been out a few days yet, and he's all – see, this is how he operates. He's already trying to let the powers that be know I'm already feeling better. They told me I wouldn't feel better for a couple weeks. I feel better already. This is his way of letting him know that he is – what the favorite quote in sports injuries are, ahead of schedule. Now, again, I'm just having some fun with this.
Does that worry you, Benji? Does that worry you as a brother, as your brother's fan? I mean, that I don't know. I hate seeing guys rush back so quickly, especially I'm looking at the schedule, and it's really not all that difficult. I mean,
wait a minute.
I'd love Yachty.
Don't say that. Every game in front of you is difficult. It just got proven to us.
Yeah.
Again,
not the ones with Cincinnati.
They don't count.
Neither does Miami against Chicago.
Okay.
I tweeted that out.
Yeah. So they all count. You got to beat the guy in front of you. And at the end of the day, I'm telling you, they won't listen. The guy, Benji, you were a catcher. You know, if you felt like you could play, is there anything they could do to stop you?
Well, no, I think it's up to you once you're clear to play, but you have to be clear to play, that's for sure. But you cannot come into the stadium today and say, hey, I want to play catch or I want to do this. You have to be clear first. But, hey, man, we want to play. And you know, Yachty, that's the way of saying, hey, fans, I'm here. I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be ready to go. I don't know how long, like Jimbo said, maybe 3 weeks. But that's the way for him to say thank you to the fans. You know, I've been praying for him and stuff. And, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, man. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I want him in 3 weeks, so why not? But I don't know if he's going to feel that good in 3 weeks anyways.
My guess is this will be a situation where when the doctor says, you're at no greater risk than – what you would normally be, that he'll be playing. That's my guess, and that's why I said 3 weeks. We'll see what happens.
It's Yachty. I have a hard time with doctor saying you can't play yet.
Well, no. I mean, listen, if a doctor says he can't play, then he can't play. Yeah. My point is if a doctor, when the doctor says to him, your risk is no different than if you go out there any other time. Yeah. Obviously, weird things happen, right?
Yep.
But you're at no more greater risk. But I would take another week. Yachty be like, you can think whatever you want, but if you're telling me I'm at no more risk than I normally am, I'm going to play. Now,
yep.
Let's talk about the play on the field. We had a couple of clunkers against Minnesota. I'm not making any excuses for anybody. I don't like excuses. I know they were tired. You know who else was tired? The Cubs. They went and whooped Miami's ass. So, and listen, I get it, right? I'm more on the emotional thing. Like, it was an emotional high. They come back. Things don't start out so well. But they've been dead for a couple of games. Listen, we can talk about two games, but guys, we got a problem. We got a real problem. And, you know, rightfully so. And I'm sorry, this isn't a witch hunt. You can say it is whatever it wants. But when two guys you are desperately counting on aren't hitting, and I mean not hitting at all, it'd be different if both these guys were hitting 220. But these guys are hitting 150 and 176. How much longer? I'm sorry, 152 and 151. 100 and something at bats apiece. How much longer can we live with this, Benji?
I'm going to tell you this straight up. I'm going to say this, and I like those two guys a lot. But if you have somebody in the bench that's doing better than them, I could really understand that they would do something about it, and I don't understand why they don't. But when you don't have anybody on the bench that is probably doing better, then you got to play them. It's like Encarnacion. They don't have anybody that could do any better in Cleveland, but he's been proven he can do it. It's just this year is the only year that he's been struggling. This is the only year he's been struggling. And let me tell you, the home runs and RBIs are there. It's all about the average. But you know, Carp in this case and Fowler, Carp has been struggling for a little bit longer than that. But if you have somebody else like Jericho or Wong, Wong was hot. He was hot. I wonder if he's still hot after all these days that being on the bench. I wonder if he's still hot. But Wong was hot. And maybe Matheny, by not putting him in the lineup, maybe he cooled it off, and that's what you hate. If you have somebody that's doing the job and it's hot, why not keep him in there? Jericho is playing better than Carp at this moment. I don't understand why don't we do that at this moment, right, in our situation, of course. But for, like in the case of Fowler, Pham is hurt. Kind of hurt.
He'll be back today.
You don't have, yeah, but how percent? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Maybe he wanted to go last game.
He might not be 100%. You know what I'm saying? He might not be 100%. But if you have Bader, and Bader's crushing it, and Fowler's struggling, and then Pham's crushing it, and then you have Osuna. Osuna has to play. And he's not far away from getting hot. He's 250. I mean, that's way better than 170 or 150, of course. So, if you have a guy that can substitute your guy, I don't see why not. The problem is if we don't have him, and then you got to play him. But we have to look at ourselves and see, okay, do we have that guy? And then you make your own mind, right?
Yep.
And how long? For how long more would you make your mind? How long are you going to allow this?
Well, I get the whole Colton Wong thing. I'm not going to freak out about him sitting one game. I mean, he sat the second game. I mean, whatever. My thing is this,
game becomes two with a day off. Remember
But everybody sat that one. So my point is this, though. Hang on. Here's my point on this. Here's the problem as I see it, and this is what I want to hear from you. Listen, Dexter Fowler and Matt Carpenter, regardless of what you think of them, they have a history of some success in the game of baseball. I would say both of them at different stages have been very productive players, especially in stretches. What's the fine line here, Benji, as a player? What's the fine line as a player? Because the player is going to say, hey, how am I supposed to get it going if I don't play? I mean,
you want me to tell you the difference between them two?
Between Fowler and Carpenter?
Yeah.
Well, I was talking more the difference between a guy that's had basically quite a bit of success in the big leagues versus a guy that's hasn't had as much success but is playing well right now. How do you justify playing this guy now but not playing the guy that's had more success? Because otherwise, how's the guy that's had more success get going? And again, I'm not advocating it. I'm saying that this is obviously the only reason to play him.
But he's been playing for a month already, Jim.
No, I agree. Listen, I'm with you. That's what I asked you originally. How long's too long?
Yeah, you're not giving him a week and saying, okay, you're in the bench. That's not the case with us. These guys have been playing every single day for the past month and a week. So they have their chance to go. I mean, of course, I want a healthy, good player, Carp. I want it. We want it. We're fans. We want a healthy hitting Fowler. It'll help us big time. But the difference between both guys, Fowler's in the 170s, and Carp is in the 150s. Carp's not hitting the ball. Carp's striking out way more. Carp is not hitting the ball with power. He's not hitting the ball with authority. He's hitting a lot of weak fly balls or something. Fowler, at least the games that I've seen, many games that I've seen, at least he hits the ball hard, you know, like two out of four at bat. Maybe he'll hit a couple line drives. They're out. I get it. But then he's still putting the bat on the ball hard. You know, I seen it when I was doing the games over there. He was hitting the gaps, and the ball was caught. And then he hit the other gap, and the ball is caught. I mean, hard hits. And then line drives to second base. And then line drive one hoppers to second base to a shortstop. I seen that. But have you seen that from Carp? It's what I want to know. That's the difference between them two. A manager will see Fowler and say, okay, but Fowler puts the ball and play hard somewhere. More than you know, obviously he's not hitting an average, but he's still hitting the ball hard. He's about to come out or something. You have that in you. But when you see Carp struggling, I mean, you see, I know you guys have seen it. I know Josh and you have seen it. You've seen how his at-bats have been lately. I mean, it's week after week after week going a fly ball, weak fly ball. He has his spurts because playing every day, you're going to have your ups, obviously. Even if you're down like that, you're still going to hit because you're a good hitter. You're just struggling. So, but man, I mean, the strikeouts, he's being struck out so easy. He's being weak fly balls, things like that. So that is the difference between I would let Fowler maybe try to get out of it because he's hitting the ball a little better, or I let Carp sit him down and see what I have to do with him when I have a Wong or when I have a Jerka hitting over 250, over almost 280 or something like that. You know, that's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing I find interesting about Jerko is, you know, Jerko's like that guy that when he's going, like everybody wants to ride him like he's a Triple Crown racehorse, right? The problem with Jerko is that every year what happens with Jerko is then he struggles and everybody says, well, you exposed him. You played him too much. He's a utility guy. He's not an everyday guy. But then when they don't play him every day, everybody complains. So I'm so confused of what he is and what's best for him. And I don't know. Listen, I don't.
Everyday guy is not hitting anything.
Well, that's my point. See, that's where I'm going with this. Yeah, it'd be great. You know, and people were asking me about Carson Kelly. Why are you down on Carson? I'm not down on Carson Kelly.
Nobody's down on him. Nobody here is down on Carson Kelly. We want him to perform. We want him to be good. We want him to hit. We want him to call a good game. We want him to block everything. We're cheering for the Cards. We're not cheering against the Cards. We're trying to find a way where Carson Kelly have not shown anybody since he's been in the big league yet that he can hit. And the people that I've talked to have told me about their catching has been, you know, average. It's not something over the top in catching either. So what do you want me to do? We're here, me, you, and Josh. We're here supporting the Cards. We're not dogging anybody. We want them to perform. But in this case, It's how they're doing what we're discussing, how they are doing, not what we want. If you want to talk about what me, you, and Josh want, and Steve-O, we want them to perform because it helps us win games. But that's not what we're discussing. We're discussing that they're not doing it right now.
We're trying to find a reason. We're trying to find a reason behind, you know, our basically an answer to these struggles. I mean, we don't – I'm sitting here looking at it, and the last 7 days – or games, I guess, it's Fowler and Carpenter are hitting – have two hits off 41 at-bats and have struck out 10 times, five apiece.
In 7 games?
In 7 games. They've had two hits and 41 at-bats. One hit apiece.
And you think
they've both been big hits.
Yeah. But okay. So here's an interesting question. And Benji, you can go ahead and would you rather have the guys that hit in key moments every now and then and bat well below 200? Or would you rather a guy hit 250 plus and, you know, key hits not as often? You know, I mean, that's
he will be more often than the guy hitting one something, I tell you that.
Well, my whole thing is, like, if their average is higher and they're getting on base, they're creating more run, their weighted, you know, runs created is higher.
It will help the team.
Yes, it will help the team in more games than just one here and there. I mean, God knows how many games we're going to see Fowler, you know, walk it off or Carpenter walk it off. So what? Their one hit is going to issue them in a lineup for the next month, and they're going to sit here and bat, you know, 1 for 23 like Fowler's doing right now, or 1 for 18 like Carp's doing. Like, I don't – and that's where I don't get it. I don't understand how you can sit here and continuously put the same guys in the lineup other than the money aspect, but we'll just we've done – shot that bird a couple of times, so
or the veteran,
yeah, maybe. Veteran, you know, prior history, previous accomplishments, yeah, but they're
but you know
all going
happen,
downhill.
But you know what's going to happen, Josh? What's going to happen is we're winning games. I mean, not the last.
Oh
game,
yeah,
of course, but we had a great homestand.
Yep,
let's put it that way. We had a great homestand overall. We lost the last two. All right, that's fine. Move on. But we had a great homestand. We're winning. That's why, I bet you anything, that's what they're thinking in their head, like the managers and everybody.
Yep.
They're probably thinking, okay, we're still winning games. Let's see how we can write this up, and hopefully they catch fire later. But once this thing, Josh, once this thing starts evening it out and we start losing games because we couldn't hit, we start losing games 2-1, we start losing games 3-1, and all of a sudden we cannot buy a hit or buy an RBI, guess what? It's going to come back to all of them. It's going to come back, and it's going to open that window that we don't discuss now because of winning. It's going to be open, and everybody's going to say the same thing. Everybody's going to say, hey, listen, we can hit. We can fire hits. And then Carp is hitting this, and Fowler's hitting this, and so-and-so are hitting hit, and that is going to come out. But since we're winning, it's holding it up a little bit.
We're relying on the pitching staff, That's where I get worried personally. I don't think these guys are going to sit here and post. Do what?
Just win and losses itself. They're holding on.
Yep.
And if they don't hold on for win and losses, and we start shaking, and then all of a sudden the offense is not going good. Guess what? They're going to talk about the offense. We're not scoring runs. They're already starting to talk about the offense anyway.
Hey, how about this, though? Can you imagine that what if I told you that 34 games into the season, heading out on a big road trip out west where, you know, it's a tough road trip to go west. What if I told you how much I was looking forward, you know, to Miles Michaelis taking the mound to halt a two-game losing streak and have, really, to be honest with you, have the utmost confidence that he will do so.
Yep. And that I was just thinking about that on the drive out here.
But that happens more than we think, Jimbo. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like when a lot of teams lose it 3 games or 2 games, all of a sudden CC Sabathia is on the mound. I bet you they're thinking the same way we are right now. Like, oh, man, you know, I know what you mean by Michaelis, but I'm just saying that happens. Those situations kind of happen a lot. And I was too. I was thinking about that too. Don't get me wrong. I was thinking of, man, we can wait to see Mikolas because he's the guy who's been pitching great, right? So, but it happens a lot, man. It happens in the big league a lot.
Well, it's just baseball, right? It's just baseball.
Yeah,
how confident were you when Martinez was taking the mound against Minnesota? You're like, okay, we had a clunker the day before. We got our guy going. It's a day game.
And Odorizzi, bro.
Yeah.
Odorizzi had a 5 ERA. I was like, man, this game is ours, man. We got these. And
yeah.
It didn't work out. So that's just baseball, man. I mean, maybe Mikolas, hopefully today, Mikolas come in and shut it down, but who can assure that? You know, we saw it. What happened in Minnesota in the series.
Interesting. There's good. I mean, for all Cardinal fans everywhere, good news. You know, Anthony Reyes, or Alex Reyes. I'm sorry,
Alex.
Anthony. I got 2006 World Series on my mind. Alex Reyes threw well. Come out of it feeling good and is ready to keep progressing. They already have a plan in place. And the Cardinals are not messing around here. They're flat out saying he will start. This is where you're going to start seeing, I think, some of what you saw from the Dodgers and Houston last year. They've been doing this shuttle thing with the bullpen a lot. They did have to fill out a start for Waino because he went on the deal. But now I think you're going to start seeing it with more people. Like, this has become a big start for Luke Weaver in San Diego to try to get back on track. Because right now everybody's got him pegged as the guy that Reyes is gonna come in. I think if you would have asked, if you asked everybody a couple months ago, it was, well, and me included, I always assumed, you know, Reyes is going to get ready and we're just hoping to get a couple good months out of Waino. That's what I thought. Or let's see what's going on with Waka. So, to be honest with you here, Luke Weaver is right now the guy on the outside looking in a little bit. I'm still not convinced that will happen. I mean, sometimes we're talking 3 weeks from now, okay? So let's be realistic and say sometimes, unfortunately, these things take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a big start for Luke Weaver. You're going out to play a San Diego team that's obviously a sub-500 team. It's a pitcher's ballpark. This would be a good opportunity, I think, for Luke Weaver to get it going. Is this a big start for him, Benji?
Oh, it's a huge start for him, not only for those reasons that you mentioned, but just for himself and for ourselves, you know, as a fan. As a team, we need Luke Weaver to pitch as well as he has been. You know, not lately, but as well as we know he can do it. We need him. We need him big time. So it's not only for the situations that you mentioned, which I bet you anything, it's in his head. It's in his head. But he needs to pitch better just for himself. For himself first, and then, you know, obviously, we can talk about our team and wins and all that stuff, but I'm saying we need him on high confidence, and this game is huge. It's totally huge for him.
Well, as we head to the pitcher's ballpark, you know, we've touched already on Fowler and Carpenter. We've talked about what we've seen. We've talked about what we've done. A lot of articles lately, even Mozeliak addressing in his interview with somebody in town here that, you know, they feel that some of this has been unlucky. So now that's the new hot term is, you know, batted ball luck. So who better to bring on and talk about batted ball luck and its relevance to not only the Cardinals but the game of baseball, but more importantly to the Cardinals, because I'm curious, especially with the conversation we had earlier with Mr. Stone, how it relates and what it really tells us, because, you know, I can have batted ball luck all day. Sooner or later, I got to perform. So I mean, it's a slippery slope. I get it. I'm sure it's an indicator that things will eventually, because luck is what it is. But I'll be curious to get his take on this. So let's welcome in Mo's Algorithm, as it's time now for bow ties and sweaters with Mo's Algorithm, where analytics meet the eye test. What do you say, Mo? Mo's, I should say. Let's not get in trouble here, like you did on Twitter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we don't want that again.
Yes, you're the algorithm. You're not actually Mo. Let's get that on record. So, Mo's, the hot term around here now is batted ball luck. Another thing that I think I know what it means, but why don't you tell us what that stat is, what it tells us, and how they come up with it?
Well, it's a combination of BABIP, batting average, and balls in play. And a lot of people look at just BABIP, and determine whether a guy is having, whether he's unlucky or not. You also have to look at his pull percentage as opposed to going the other way percentage, going up the middle, and as well as his soft, medium, and hard hit rate. You combine all those factors, and you can get an idea of whether a guy's been unlucky or if he's just really not hitting that well.
So, what, I mean...
I want to know where you were when I was playing, buddy, because one half of the season, I had 73 hard hit balls for outs, and barely one person noticed in the whole world, and that was my wife. I want to know where you were... I hit 73 hard hit balls before the All-Star break, and they were all out. 73. And I wrote them down every single day because I wanted to figure out, gosh, man, I must be in the wrong term or something, because, holy crap, I keep hitting balls hard everywhere. And I did it. I did it for a half, and I stopped. I wonder if I would have kept going, right, and see how many I would have hit, but 73 at the half, hard hit balls that were out.
How much money?
Where you were, Mo?
How much money you think that cost him, Mo?
Probably quite a bit, because he would have hit for a much higher average that year.
So I got a question for you. When I think of batted ball luck, I'm probably looking at this wrong. To me, and maybe it does figure in it, but Steve-O and I were at a game, a day game, and we watched Carpenter hit two balls that are base hits every day of the week and twice on Sunday without a shift. The second baseman was literally 50 feet into the outfield in the grass because of the shift, and fielded it like a second baseman and threw him out at first. Is that included in batted ball luck, like the fact that they did that, or is that just knowing that it's the shift?
Yeah, it is. It's included. And that's where you take into consideration their pull rate, their going up the middle rate, and their oppo rate. You know, and if you look at Matt Carpenter, he's pulling the ball actually less than he has in his entire career over the last few years. He's down to 43.8%. Last year, he was pulling the ball at 47.2%. And if you go up and look at his BABIP, last year he's at 274, which he's a slow runner, so he's not going to be at that average, that league average of 300. And this year he has a BABIP of 186. So he's not pulling the ball as much as he did last year, right? And he's still at a 186 BABIP. The guy has been, and he's still hitting the ball hard. You know, he's at a 39.7% hard hit rate. His career average is 36.6. You combine all those factors, and you can say for sure that when he makes contact, because a lot of times lately he's choosing not to even swing, but when he makes contact, it's hard. He's not pulling it a ton, and he's just getting out. You know, he's been unlucky when it comes to when he puts the ball in play. Now, about his strikeouts and his choosing not to swing and all that stuff, that's a whole other story. But when Matt Carpenter's putting the ball in play, this year he's gotten unlucky quite a few times.
So let me ask you this question then. So I've said on that my thing has been about the walks. I mean, we have always have great spirited, debated topics on the walks. So I would say this to you. I'm telling you that if you're going to tell me that there's a guy sitting in a back room telling Matt Carpenter you need to walk this many times, there's a guy in the back room on the other side saying don't throw him so many balls. Throw the ball in the strike zone. Or throw it damn close. So is somebody now telling him you got to start swinging the bat? Or is that even – I mean, maybe this might be a better question for Benji, but I'm going to ask him from the baseball side of it. But from the analytics side, do you think somebody's telling him you got to start swinging at some of these pitches?
Maybe. And I only say maybe because he has a career-high walk rate right now, 17.6%. Last year was 17.5%. So he's well over his career average walking. So I really don't know if someone's telling him to change his approach or not. That would probably be a John Mabry thing, and I really don't know what John Mabry tells these hitters.
So my point then is you're making me sound like a genius, because if he's at his all-time high walk rate, it'll tell you right now that they're overrated because they're awful. So somebody's got to start hitting the ball. So how about that? Benji. Benji is as a hitter, and you know this, do you change your approach and tell yourself, I got to start swinging at some of these pitches? I mean, I guess you can probably only speak for yourself,
But if you knew darn good and well that you were striking out more, I mean, by taking pitches on the corner all the time, how do you fix that? How do you adjust it?
I'm going to tell you from different angles so you guys get it. John Maybrick, right now and before the homestand, he's probably sitting down with him almost every day and telling him, you have to swing at strike. You have to swing at those. Those are the ones you get a hit. When you swing at balls, there's no way you get hit at balls, not being Carpenter, because he doesn't have a reach. He doesn't reach down. He's a really good eye guy. So most of those guys don't have off-balance swings like Vladimir or Ichiro or guys like that, right? So I bet you anything, Mabry has told him. That's what we saw, the different swing rate in the homestand. I don't know if you guys noticed that. He did swing at 2-0s. He did swing at 3-1s. He did swing at first pitches with runners on. I mean, he was swinging this homestand more than I've seen him all year, okay? With that being said, that meant that Mabry said it, Mueller said it, the assistant hitting coach. I told him, I'm sure the teammates probably talked to him and tell him, if I were coaching an assistant hitting coach down in the cage, I will tell him, everybody's telling him, Matt, listen, when you're getting good counts, swing the bat if it's right there. Swing it. You don't need a take, because that gives you more chances to get a hit, more chances to get the average up, more chances to hit the ball hard somewhere. But if you take the strike to swing at a ball, which we've seen it a lot on him this year, he take the strike, swing at a high pitch. Take the strike or take the pitch, strike or whatever. But I bet you anything, they tell him all the time, you get in a good count, let it fly, man. Let it fly. Let it go. Be aggressive on this pitch. Be aggressive on this strike. Be aggressive. I bet you anything, guys, he has this conversation already. I bet you 100% that he had it.
So can we just go ahead and put it in stone and say that Carpenter, you know, he's been known to work counts and take walks. He's been a great leadoff hitter over the last few years, and that's awesome. But is working a two-strike count now, is that the issue with Carpenter? Because the shift, because he's behind in the count. Is that what is killing Matt Carpenter's, you know, end of his career, basically?
I believe so. I believe so. I know the numbers might not say it. I'm not an expert.
Oh, it does. I have the numbers.
For when I see a guy taking a 2-0 count or 3-1 count, which is your count, and usually, not every time, usually you get a fastball, and you don't swing at it, you end up either walking, which you didn't get the RBI, or you get an out, which you didn't get the hit, right? Yep. So that combo right there, you might get a walk, but your lower RBIs will be lower, and the hits will be lower, which we're experiencing right now with him. You know, even if it's if it's bad luck or whatever, but we still having low hits. I bet you anything, like if 50 at bats, and you get 2-0 counts or 3-1 counts, and they throw your fastball. And you know, and 50 at bat, you swing 30 times out of the 50. I bet you you might get 10 more hits. You might get 15 more hits. Who knows? I mean, this is just talking out of my head, you know, because of experience, because me being there. If I didn't swing at a 2-0 or 3-1 or 2-1 sometimes fastball that I saw right there, or maybe a nice little hanging changeup that I saw, whatever. I mean, my average would have been really low, because then they get comfortable, then they get pitches like we've seen against Carp, and then get Fowler. Fowler is almost, it's not the same as Carp, because he swings. He's a free swinger more than Carp. But you see the at-bats, 2-0 count to 3-2 and strikeout. 2-0 count to 3-2, a weak fly ball. Because the 2-0 count, they take it. I've been watching, man. I've been watching. I don't know the numbers. But I've been watching games, and it's easy to see.
Mose, so my question, I guess, then is now that we kind of know what it is.
And Jimbo.
Yeah.
Jimbo, and Mabry has not told anybody to take a walk. Let's get that out of the way. There's nobody in that bench that's going to go out and tell the guy, we need to walk. Okay? Nobody. Nobody is going to say that in that bench. So let's get that out of the way. So if the guys are taking, they want more walks, they want more these, whatever, it's their guys. If no coaches is going to tell you, go out there, buddy, and walk or try to walk more. They want you to swing the bat until it's a ball.
So the question is this then, Mose. So would you say that you're, based on what you've seen by Carpenter's whatever this is, are you confident he's going to come out of this and perform? Or, like, what's it tell you? Like, what does it tell you?
I mean, if he continues to hit the way he's hitting, he's going to come out of it. Numbers say that. The numbers say that. He's hitting the ball hard. He's not got a lot of soft contact. He's at a career-low soft contact rate. His fly ball percentage is actually down. He is hitting slightly more ground balls, but he's also hitting more line drives. So a lot of this speaks to Matt Carpenter coming out of this. He's not going to hit 151 all year long. That's just not going to happen.
So, Mike, okay, so two things I'm going to say based on your numbers and our conversation. Number one, my guess is that, and I'm going to tell you this, I'm going to believe what you're telling me. It doesn't seem right to me, and I'm gonna say why it doesn't seem right. Like, it all sounds wrong to me because I can't believe you're telling he. It seems to me like he's been. I'm sure the strikeouts have magnified how poor he's doing, because I got to be honest with you. Besides a couple of bets, I don't remember him hitting the ball hard. I don't. So I guess the strikeouts are glossing over it.
What Mojo said is what we've been discussing. He's going to play.
Well, and that's my point. That's where I was going with this. This, what you're telling us, let's face it, Mose, I know you're great, but the Cardinals have access to this and more information, because Mo said as much at the thing. Yeah. He's like, listen, you know, the stuff that you guys are reading, some of it we use, but we have our own stuff too, and our numbers tell us different things than what some of these, and he said these publications tell you. We have our own numbers too, and sometimes they don't always match up. So my point is this. If you're taking what you have and you yourself are saying that you think that as long as things continue, he's going to come out of it, well, then this answers our question why he's playing, because they have every indication by the numbers that he's going to come out of this. So that answers that question. I guess the only thing I would say is I know this is what the numbers say, but see, this is why this is so hard. I mean, I know, and guys, I'll go around the table, and you tell me, am I the only one? There are, like, you telling me that he has a career, like, he's hitting the ball hard, and he's not doing, he's not, I mean, I find that hard to believe. But listen, I'm going to defend the other side of this and say maybe it's hard for me to believe because of the strikeouts. It seems to me like, and I know, I see people do this all the time, all he ever does is strikeout, all he ever does is strikeout. I know all he does isn't strikeout, but God, it seems like it's a lot. So it overshadows. Josh, I'll go to you first and then Benji. Am I wrong? I mean, it doesn't feel to me like he has swung the bat well, but the numbers tell us that he, besides the strikeouts, when he does swing it, that he's actually hitting it hard. I find that hard to believe, but I'm going to agree with
you. I do too, and I've watched majority of the games. I mean, I work nights, so I don't always get around to it. But, you know, and this is the thing with numbers. There's, you know, how Mo said with the hard hit percentage, the medium, you know, hit percentage or whatever, pull, all those stuff go into one factor that gives him his opinion, that right. Factor into his opinion. Well, my opinion, so like I said earlier, with working two strike counts, he's worked 62% of his plate appearances this year have been two strike counts. You want to know how many shifts? That's up from 55% in 2016, 57% in 2017, and then the shift it's going up through the roof now. It's at 46% now. Every plate appearance, or like 46% of his plate appearances. So that's why he's getting out. So, I understand it, right. But there's different ways that, like, Mose wants to say he's coming out of it because of these numbers. I say he's not going to come out of it because
they're not going to stop shifting him.
Well, yeah, they're not going to stop shifting them. And not only that, but the outcome, the average, the basic statistics, like average on-base percentage, all those, they're all diminishing. Him and Fowler both, throughout the over the course of the last 3 years. They're all lowering.
So let me. So now I go to Benji. Here, let's go to the hitter. Let's go to the guy that played in the league, right? Benji, if I'm hearing both these, like, I think Josh and I are on the same page. Josh has done way more homework on it than I, and obviously Mo's, you know, he knows his stuff. You know, him. My question to you as the hitter is, it sounds to me like if somebody came and gave, and let's face it, you were a hitting coach. So if somebody came and gave you all this information, and I always say, I know just enough to be dangerous, I think is not the simple solution here to swing earlier in the count and hit the ball the other way? Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong.
It's not a simple solution. No,
no. I know it's not simple, but what else can you do?
Yeah, well, you have to work your counts and put the ball on play on your counts. That's how the good hitter do. When you see an Altuve, it's a superstar. It's a Hall of Famer. When you see Vladdy hitting off 3 feet off the plate, that's a given. That's a freaking Hall of Famer. I mean, you don't see those guys too often. We're talking about normal guys. A guy who's going to hit 280 to 300, normal, like a 280 to 290 to 270 to 280. That's what we're talking about. For those guys, it's hard. You know why? Because they have to swing at strikes. They have to wait for their pitch. And what do you do? What do you tell your kids from five years old? What do you tell their kids? Hey, 2-0, two balls, no strikes. Wait for yours, buddy. Right there. It has to be perfect or it has to be good. It has to be a strike. But you want him swinging. That's the whole difference about these guys. Carp, he cannot go off the plate to get a hit. Fowler cannot go up the zone or cannot go off the plate to get a hit. They need the strike. That's what I'm trying to tell you guys. These guys need to swing at their pitch, and their pitch is 2-0, 3-1, 0-0 maybe. Like you said, Jimbo, these counts help you. These counts do not hurt you. These counts will help them. But if they don't swing, or they don't connect hard enough, or if they don't swing, or they swing and miss, obviously it's not going to help anybody. But that's one of the reasons why they're struggling. But you know, you swing at your strikes, you'll be all right. I bet you anything. If Carp starts swinging at those balls and strikes, you know, we'll see a big difference in Fowler, too. If they don't miss so many pitches of foul ball, foul ball, foul ball, foul ball, I bet you'll see a difference, too. So what does that tell us? They got to swing at their pitch.
And then I think it gets down to the mentality part of it, and it just starts becoming a trend with them. You know, I feel like this year, too, with Carpenter, he's looked back and stared down an umpire or – you know, bitched about the strike zone more this year than I've seen in previous years. Am I the only one that's seeing that?
Well, I'm sure he's frustrated.
I mean, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So that's affecting his mentality up at the plate, thinking, oh, well, you know, in previous years, this was a strike or this wasn't a strike, and I've been taking this for years, and now all of a sudden it's a strike to some umpires. And I get it. That's a whole nother, you know, book that we can open up at a later date, but with the umpires. But that's what I'm saying with the mentality of going up there and just the same reoccurrence after reoccurrence. It's going to get to them.
Well, I want to ask Mose before he goes.
Yeah, he does all the time.
So, Mose, I'm going to ask you before you go. Using numbers, what would you say to Matt Carpenter? Because, I mean, let's face it, this isn't just a coach thing now. I mean, they said they sat him down and went through numbers with him. So what would you tell him? Like, what advice would you give him?
To be more aggressive and to not look so desperate. I agree with what was just said in regards to he looks desperate. You know, he gets that 3-1 count and he doesn't look. And this is the numbers guy giving you the eye test here. Is he gets that 3-1 count and he doesn't look to grip it and rip it. He is desperately looking for that walk. And I don't know why, because he is a good walker and always has been. So I don't understand why now he's so desperate to get walks. It's like he's in such a funk that he just wants to walk to get out of the batter's box.
Because he's relied on it for all these years. He's relied on the walk.
Yeah, ding, 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 ding. It is sad to see because he is a good hitter. He is a good hitter, and he has the ability to hit well, and his numbers show that he is hitting well. He's just not getting the results he wants.
Well, those results are then changing his approach at the plate, and it's making him look skittish at the plate and just desperate to get out of there. And when he strikes out when he thinks he should have walked, he gets upset because he's in such a funk, so he takes it out on the umpire. You know, it's if
nobody
could get...
tell you about the mental part, just think this, guys. There's no numbers measuring heart. There's no numbers measuring cojones. There's no numbers measuring your mind.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's true. I say it all the time. It's a tough thing. It's not as easy. I mean, we talked about it live at Patio's last time with a bunch of fans. I really believe the issue sometimes, the reason why it becomes, and I'll use this term for myself. I'm not going to talk about nobody else. Not about me. The reason it becomes easy for us to bitch and complain on Twitter or whatever is because you guys, and I say you guys because you were part of that group, Benji, you guys make it look easy sometimes. Yeah. You guys make me feel like you ought to be able to just make an adjustment and hit that, you know, I was telling somebody the other day, stand in the box, okay? This is why the best in the business looks silly. When a pitcher is on.
Go to the batting cage, Jimbo.
Yeah, when a pitcher is on. A pitcher being on means he is throwing multiple pitches where he wants to throw them. And as a hitter, you know that. And when a ball comes out of the hand, and that's why you swing at sliders that are 3 feet off the plate because it looks like a fastball, and you know he's pinpoint with everything. It's difficult, man.
To the batting cage. In the batting cage are fastballs, and you'll see how hard it is to hit.
Yeah, balls that are just straight. Those balls are straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing what you guys do as hitters. It's the hardest thing there is in the world. I don't think somebody believes it, but at the end of the day, it is, and I think that's why we're all so quick to judge. Now, that being said, these guys are all professionals. This is what they get paid to do.
A lot.
And in the end, they are judged on results. And we can talk like Mose can come on here and tell me how Carpenter should, you know, this is what he should be doing and shouldn't be doing. But at the end of the day, and I've said this 100 times too, the only stat that really matters is wins and losses.
Yep.
And in between and there somewhere is how a player helps his team get more wins than losses. So we'll see what happens. This is interesting. But, Mose, I appreciate you breaking down batted ball luck for us because that's the new hot topic. I'm sure I'll be texting you. Something will happen this weekend, I promise you. That'll be a new term, and I'll send you that because you're awesome at this. We appreciate you greatly.
Yeah, no, and before I go, you know, one thing that's really cool about this team so far is you have Dexter, Ozuna, and Carpenter, abysmal at the plate right now. All three of them they give me a stomachache to watch, all three of them. And that's a third of your lineup batting that way. There's still six games over .500. Imagine what this team is going to be like when those three start hitting like they know how to. Team is good.
Yeah.
This team's good.
I think my next task for you, unless something crazy happens by next Thursday, I want you to take a look at Ozuna and see what you see there. And give us what you think. Okay. I'm going to give him one more week. Think this, like, everybody's going to think I'm crazy. I think this is a great road trip for him. Get out of here.
A lot of guys.
Like, he's such an excitable guy. Like, you know, I think that whole Cubs series, man, you're talking about a guy that was in Miami, right?
Yep.
I think this stuff has been for him. He's like a kid on Christmas morning. I really believe this. Mm-hmm. I think the best thing in the world for him, go to San Diego with the team. Go on the road. Go to San Diego. Nice weather. Nice warm weather. Get out of here. Go. So my guess is this is the week Ozuna heats it up. We'll see what happens. But if not, next week, that's going to be your assignment, Moses. Tell us what's going on with Ozuna. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, my man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
That is Mo's Algorithm. He joins us each week for Bow Ties and Sweaters, where analytics meets the eye test. Well, I say every week. It seems like occasionally he's got something going on. As everybody, like Steve-O's not with us today. He has a job. But, hey, listen, I enjoyed that. That was good because batted ball luck's an interesting topic. And, you know, we had the conversation earlier with the hitting guy that
yeah,
works
this
with
whole
the pros.
Episode.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the game, it's so hard, and it's so much more complicated.
It's fascinating.
But am I right? Am I wrong, though? Like when you watch a Benji or a Yachty, they make it look easy.
Yeah. Oh, there's hitters left and right on every team. They make it look easy. I mean, it.
And you know why? You know why we might make it a lot easier than most guys is because we have the right mindset.
The you right know, mindset, the right tools. Yeah.
No, well, the right tools you have to have it. Of course, you're up there, but the mind, remember we were talking about confidence at the plate. Carp never looked at the umpire and started arguing as many times as I've seen in this year, and never. And he actually went to the dugout like really, really upset, like really pissed off. And I never seen him like that, you know, in years. So, well, let me tell you this: our minds are set because we struggled before. When most of these kids, and I can point to you, one almost Hall of Fame guy, Nomar Garcia Parra. When Nomar Garcia Parra struggled for the first time in his career, that was it. He was over. Nobody signed him anymore because he never could get out of it. But those guys are so used to being so good that they don't know how to struggle. And I wonder if Carp, everywhere Carp has gone, has been a great hitter, has been a 300 hitter, has been a great RBI guy, has been a great walk ratio guy, has been everything. Now that he struggled, it's becoming a really issue in his mind. It's becoming a really conscious issue. Fowler, since he struggled last year at the beginning, he bounced back, but he didn't bounce back too much. He bounced back a little bit. So guess what? This year he struggles again. And these guys are not used to struggle, man. This is for the fans out there. Just remember this. So when you see guys coming up from the minor league, like everybody that hits in the minor league, and they come back and struggle, it's a test. It's a really big test for us when we struggle. But some guys have struggled and come back. Some guys have not. I mean, think about it, and you'll see what I mean, man. When you struggle, you have the right. How about A-Rod? A-Rod was a stud. But when A-Rod started struggling late in his career, what happened? He got out of the game. He couldn't fix that because he didn't know how, because he's always been so great. You know what I'm saying?
I thought that we couldn't bring up A-Rod.
Yeah, hey, I thought we weren't supposed to bring up A-Rod. You got mad at us for bringing up A-Rod.
No, I got nauseous when I said it.
Oh, it's funny. It's funny. Well, hey, listen, man. Really enjoyed this today. This was fun. Like doing this. It's awesome. I know.
And let's tell the fans, Jimbo.
Yep.
Jimbo, let's tell the fans.
Okay.
The more you boo a guy, the harder you make it on him. The more you boo the guys for not doing their job, the harder you're making it for them to turn the page around. Just remember that. If you're a fan and you hate somebody and you don't want to, he gave up a home run and you're booing the crap out of the guy, it makes it hard on the guy. And he plays for your hometown team. He plays for your card. So the harder you boo, the harder it is for him to come out of it. Just remember that. Coming from a guy that played.
Well, like I've said it on Twitter, I sit there and I tear Fowler and Carpenter and, you know, anybody that struggles, I tear, well, mainly just those two. But, you know, I tear them a new one. And it's not because I want to see it. Absolutely not. I would love to see them do just phenomenal work up at the plate and look, you know, spectacular like they did when they were 28, 27 years old. I mean, but it's getting to the point now where it's been going on for so long. We saw it last year. I mean, hell, Carp might have walked over 100 times last year, but he still batted 241 last year. That's not what gets, and that's why I think my, quote unquote, my generation is bored with baseball, is because people sit here and they.
Well, here's the problem. I had a conversation last year with a guy about Carp, and he said he's walking a ton, and he was telling me, Jim, you're sitting here saying you would prefer if he hit 280, and I said, that's right, and he said, you do know that's only two hits a week, and I said, you're damn right I do,
why can't he get on base on hitting?
Well, hang on, but you're telling me two more hits a week isn't a big deal? I want you to think back to this last week,
really,
and two more hits wouldn't have been a big deal. It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
You just heard Justin Stone say, what do they know now in baseball? Getting three hits in an inning is really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. It's very rare, actually. So that's why slugging percentage is so important now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So walk all you want. How are you going to get home? Somebody has to drive you home. And that's what Benji was saying and what we were reiterating. When you're a guy that can hit and you're in a hitter's count and have the ability to drive a baseball. See, everybody just thinks you can drive a baseball at any time. You can't. Mm-mm. If there's one thing, and listen, this is what kills me about numbers people. The one number, go look at it, that is undisputed and is the largest sample size of anything you're going to get is across baseball. The averages decline as the hitting counts go down. So there is your opportunity to do something for your team. And again, this is the part of it where you can sit here and tell me all day long but this is where how it is what they do, people don't understand what it takes to do what they do. It's not that easy.
No.
It's not that
Jimbo,
easy.
Let me tell you this real quick. The percentage, if you want to go by numbers, right? We've been talking about numbers for a while. If you want to go by numbers, the percentage of you getting a hit, I'm not talking a hit, I'm saying double, triple, home run, whatever, you know, a hit, a percentage goes way up high when you have the good counts. When you got the good counts, and this is Mike Socha, brought us a book and said, look, this is all the players in MLB baseball right now. Now study them, and I want you to tell me what you see. And I said, wow, that's a lot of them. He goes, no, don't worry. You will figure it out really quick because you're smart. That's what he told me. So when I went through the whole book, I said, wait a minute. I see 150 when the guy has two strikes and one ball, 0-2 counts, or they're behind in the count. And I saw 300 when the guy's ahead in the counts. What does that tell you, Jimbo and Josh? What does that tell you? That if you swing at strikes, if you swing at good count strikes, you're going to be better. That's the numbers right there. So why the heck do you take a fastball or a changeup or a curveball strike when you know you're in the good counts? And those are your counts. You know what I'm saying? And I figure it out really quick. So my percentage said 90%. I'm just guessing. I'm throwing a number. But my percentage is really high to get a hit on 2-0 counts. So when I'm 2-0 counts, if he just comes right there, dude, that's your percentage, man. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
I don't understand why you want to work a walk on a 2-0 count. Dude, you do your damage there. But you see the example I gave you? Mike Socha gave me this book, and I figured it out right away. He told me I would. When you get on the good counts for a hitter, you hit 300. When you're getting good and bad counts for a pitcher, which is 1-2, 0-2, or something like that, you hit one something. Which one do you want to hit? And then you're going to take a strike? Oh, man. No chance.
Well, and that's the thing. See, there. The thing is, when you get your, and that's the thing that always irritated me about when you get yourself in a hitter's count and then don't swing at a hitter's pitch. I don't know.
What was the point of getting to a hitter's count if you're not going to swing? There's no point at all. Why even bring the bat up to the plate? It doesn't. It makes.
It's better to swing at a ball then.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, I think a trip to San Diego is in order for this team. I like the opportunity that's ahead of them. I think it's a big weekend for Luke Weaver with a lot of the things that are going on. I'll be real curious to see what comes of his start in San Diego. I think it's a good one for him. You know, Reyes on the horizon, good news there. I'm sure everybody was excited to see the note from Yadi yesterday. You know, hey, listen, through it all.
And Cecil.
Through it all. We're still in first place.
Yeah.
We're still that many games above 500, and I will agree. And we haven't even really hit our stride yet. So let's keep it going here, trying to be positive. Let's find some positive in all of this, and let's move forward. And again, for me, it really does start and finish with me. Let's be aggressive. I would like to, you know, be aggressive. I'd like Matt Carpenter to just be aggressive.
Aggressive in the zone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what we always say. With me and Mabry were there.
You know what's
we
funny?
We didn't tell him to take. We didn't tell him to swing. We said be aggressive with strikes. Be aggressive in the zone. That's all we kept preaching. You know? And what did we do that year?
Yeah, you had an unbelievable year. Unbelievable year. Hey, you know what's funny about that? On the flip side, you'd probably say the opposite to Ozuna and Fowler. They might be a little too aggressive at some pitches. But
hey, well, they might be, but I'd rather have a guy aggressive.
Oh, I agree. And that's the hard part of baseball, right?
A lot of pitchers miss pitches right down the middle, Jimbo. And if you're not aggressive, that's when you miss them. But if you're aggressive like Ozuna, they've been making good pitches on him. Obviously, mm-hmm. he's just stretching the zone. But man, if somebody misses a pitch right on him and strike him and wiggles a curveball right there, he's going to crush it because he's aggressive. I'd rather have a guy like that, right?
Oh, I'd agree with you. So
Ozuna's almost there. He's going to come out. He, like you said earlier, he's a kid in a candy store. He's got the big lights. He's got the history of Busch Stadium. He's got, I mean,
the right stadium with 40,000 people. When did
the
you
rivalries
in Miami with 40,000?
Yep, exactly. And you know what? He's gonna find it. He's a little aggressive right now, and that's fine. And I don't like some of his swings sometimes. I think they look a little ugly, but I think he's right on the cusp of just unleashing what he's done the last couple of years for Miami, but for us this time. So,
well, I will tell you just an opinion, but there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, Tommy Pham coming back, if he, you know,
and he's playing go-go defense, Josh.
What'd you say? We didn't hear you.
Oh, no, I said that he's playing gold glove defense. So until the other day, he made it. Anybody could do that, but he's playing really good in the outfield too.
Let me ask you this, Josh. You had mentioned earlier. Is he coming back?
Fam wanted to play the last game, but the doctor said no. You just stick it out this game and sit out this one, and then we had the day off, and now we're in Padres. So I heard that.
So there's not been a line. Okay,
I haven't seen anything, you know, officially announced, but it was talked about in the last game.
Okay, because I don't want
that he was
all
ready. Right. So I don't. He might.
Because we need him.
Yeah,
we need him. He's a performer, no doubt about it. So, all right. That'll do it for us today, man. I appreciate both you guys joining us. I want to remind everybody, check us out, twobirdsonabat.com. Subscribe to the podcast there. It's absolutely free. Do your shopping at Amazon there as well. Help us cover our production costs. We'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you to everybody and their continued support with doing their shopping through Amazon for us. We greatly appreciate it. Social media. Really, at the end of the day, we appreciate everything you guys do for us there as well. At Birds on a Bat Shows, where you'll find us on Twitter. A lot of new Twitter followers this week. Thank you for that. Find us on Facebook. Simply type in Two Birds on a Bat, like our Facebook page. The big thing now is once you've liked our Facebook page, go in and click Invite Your Friends. Start building up your network of friends that follow us, as that's going to help you with a contest that we should be rolling out here any day. Our good friend Josh is really working on some fun stuff with that. We're hoping to get that thing going next week. We're going to give somebody out there an opportunity to win a Marcell Ozuna autographed jersey. So we're excited about that. Compliments of our good friend Benji and Yachty. Great stuff there. Follow us on Instagram, Two Birds on a Bat Show. We'd appreciate it greatly. Special thanks to lineupmedia.fm, home of Yo Radio, the newest internet radio station that's kind of just blowing up. So many people involved in the industry coming out with stations on there. You guys are going to be able to hear from some of your favorite artists, some of your favorite people involved in the industry. It's good stuff. I mean, you're really going to enjoy it, along with just the regular radio stations. It is. It's a lot of fun. It's growing every day, and you're going to want to get in it now. So simply go to the App Store, download Yo Radio. It's absolutely free. You'll enjoy it. They take your entertainment time really seriously, guys. They really do.
And we might have a Yachty station, Jimbo. We might.
Hey, I think a Molina station's in order. I really do. I was unaware that Yachty was involved in the music business, so we're gonna have to talk to Yachty about this and see if we can get him on board. Because
M4 station.
I think a lot of people would be interested to know what's playing on Yachty's iPod, so or iPhone, I guess. Yep.
No, we hear it on Instagram Live.
Yeah,
Instagram and Facebook Live.
I know. It'd be a good thing for him. But yeah, no, we appreciate everything they do for us over at lineupmedia.fm. Brian Kroc, Andrew Allen, our producers, they do a tremendous job behind the scenes. All of our social media partners out there, of course, Nate McHenry with RallySquirrel.com. Don't forget the Rally Squirrel Club. You've got about a week left to join the Rally Squirrel Club. You can do that by simply going to RallySquirrel.com. We are going to be giving away an autographed Yadier Molina jersey to a fan, one lucky fan. All you have to do is be a member of the Rally Squirrel Club. Somebody's going to win that jersey. Again, compliments of Benji and Yadi. Thank you so much. For less than the price of a cup of coffee, you can receive the premium content and each week be available for the wonderful prizes. Thanks to our good friend Nate McHenry at Rally Squirrel. And again, that's the Rally Squirrel Club. Mick Light, Arch City Media, thanks for all you do for the show and introducing us to Josh. He's been a godsend for us here, helping us really kind of that in action producer for us with being able to look up stuff and tell us. So thank you. We appreciate you both greatly. Make sure you check out Arch City Media. Chris Lawless, my man, doing some really cool things right now. I'm really enjoying everything he's got going. I know he announced that they're going to do a Cardinals 24/7 podcast. I would recommend you check it out. I love Chris and what he does. He does a tremendous job. Again, Cardinals 24/7, Cardinals Nation, two of the best out there. Make sure you check them out and join those Facebook groups. And listen to my man. As like I said, I think he's going to do a great job, and we're happy for him. Other great ones that are out there, St. Louis Cardinals Fans Unite, Cardinal Freak, fans of Yadi. You know, listen, again, I want you guys to, if you're part of these Facebook groups out there, send me a private message. We'd like to highlight you guys sometimes, so make sure you send it in. There's great ones out there. And, again, we'd love to be a part of helping you guys promote your group. So please contact us. Like I said, we'd love to be a part of it. Again, our sponsors, InnovativeCompanies.com, thanks for all you do. Plumbing, heating and cooling, electric, construction, 35 years experience, second generation craftsman, my man Randy Green. Adam Smokehouse, thank you for the hospitality last week. If you want some great barbecue, head down to Watson Road. Have some Adam Smokehouse. My man Mike does a great job down there. Can't wait to go back. As soon as Benji gets into town, it's rib time for me. I can promise you that. Arlington Greens, the weather has turned, folks. Get out there and get your golf in. Go see Mark Marcuso down at Arlington Greens. Tell him you heard about it on Two Birds on a Bat. Great, tee times available in the middle of the day. Great tournaments on the weekends. The course is in tremendous shape. And, again, just great people hanging out down at Arlington Greens in Granite City. For everybody here at Two Birds on a Bat, I'm your host, Jim Cromer. Let's go, Birds!
Go, Birds!
Go, Birds! Go, Birds!
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.